Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Today we are bringing you another episode of the Macro Monthly podcast with UBS Asset Management. Each month we do hear from top investment professionals from UBS Asset Management's multi-asset team. Joining us for today's conversation, glad to welcome Evan Brown, portfolio manager and head of multi-asset strategy, as well as Fatu Conte, multi-asset investment specialist. So with that, Fatu, I'll pass it over to you to lead today's conversation with Evan.
We have a lot to talk about with the end of Q1 and the recent Fed meeting. So today we'll cover our latest macro views and the impact of immigration, our thoughts on Fed decision-making, and how we're positioned in the MAP portfolio. So let's jump right in, Evan. What's the latest on the economy?
Yeah, hi, Fatu, and hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us. So look, the economy is in good shape still, to put it simply. It's ongoing resilient growth and inflation on a bumpy path, but still trending lower. With economic growth, we're cooling off a little bit. We were really on a torrid pace of 4% real GDP growth for the second half annualized last year. We're stepping down this quarter to something closer to 2.5%. That's what the latest tracking numbers suggest. And we just had today a remarkably healthy job print for March, 300,000 jobs created. We're still at a 3.8% unemployment rate. This is an economy that, despite all the tightening that we've seen, is just proving remarkably resilient.
So continuing along this train of thought, right? Immigration is one of the hot topics coming into the election, and there are a lot of narratives surrounding this issue. So how do you see this impacting the macro backdrop in the U.S.?
Yeah, so what we have seen, and the CBO has just reported, that immigration, relative to the prior trend level assumption, immigration last year was 1.5 million higher and estimated for 2024 to be, 1 million higher. And this is skilled and unskilled workers. And yeah, of course, very politically charged topic, but simply from a pure macro perspective, it's been very positive for growth. I mean, trend growth is driven by two things, productivity and labor force participation. And if labor force participation is higher, then that means, higher incomes and higher growth. It also means if more people are joining the labor force, that's putting some downward pressure on wages, and that's actually helping the soft landing case as well.
When I hear downward pressure on wages, I think about that negatively impacting consumer spending and challenging the narrative of a strong U.S. economy. But you're actually saying the opposite. Why is that the case?
Yeah, I mean, when we look at labor incomes as a whole, we're really looking at three things. We're looking at how many jobs are created, where are wages, and what's the status of hours worked. Are people working more or less or fewer hours? And when you put that all together, even with wages decelerating, which, you know, to be consistent with a 2% inflation target, we've needed to see wages decelerate. That's what has enabled the Fed to become a little less concerned about like a wage price spiral and the need for more hikes, for example. We've seen enough of an improvement or steady job growth that overall total incomes have been growing very healthily, even with wages coming down. So, you have that overall nominal looking good. You have inflation coming down. That means real incomes have been growing quite well. That's good for consumption, and that wages are coming off is really what's allowing the Fed to start talking about cuts even in an otherwise strong economy.
Makes sense. And if we're seeing resilient growth and high inflation, why does the Fed still want to cut this year?
Yeah, and this is a question we're getting a lot, and it is an active debate within the Fed. You have all kinds of speakers making different arguments of how much they want to cut this year, if cutting at all. But what we're focused on, the core messaging coming from the March FOMC meeting comes from their summary of economic projections. And what they did is they revised up growth, they revised up inflation. These are their forecasts for 2024. They revised down their forecast for unemployment, and we're still projecting, it's still projecting 75 basis points of easing. And we have all these speakers, but the one who matters the most, obviously, is Fed Chair Powell. And he spoke last week, he spoke this week, and he's still of the view that that rate cuts are his base case this year, because ultimately he still thinks that the Fed is restrictive, that rates are restrictive. We are seeing a cooling off of the labor market. We are seeing the labor market coming a little bit back into balance. Rates as a whole are certainly elevated, and over time, that means that that businesses and households will need to reset at higher rates, and that does put some pressure on the economy over time. So he still thinks they're restrictive. I think that's more and more of an open debate, given that we're still getting these really strong job numbers, given that some of the interest rate sensitive sectors of the economy, like housing and manufacturing, are actually inflecting higher. But as long as inflation is trending lower, he's going to take the opportunity to cut rates this year. And so inflation remains the focus. Got a very important print, the March inflation print will be coming out on Wednesday. We in the Fed obviously will be looking very closely at that. But globally, inflation is still trending down. Central banks think they're restrictive, and they are moving towards easing.
I'm glad you touched on monetary policy outside the U.S. Can you provide us with some color on global macro conditions?
Yeah, I mean, the global economy is looking just a little more balanced. It's been primarily U.S. driven and primarily services driven. And what we're seeing now is some improvement in other areas of the world, like Europe and Japan. And we're seeing improvement away from services, some improvement in manufacturing. So yeah, the flash PMIs, which are kind of like the high frequency data that we get, and most timely data, and they're improving rapidly for Europe and Japan. Global manufacturing as a whole, including China, leading indicators, ticking higher. So overall, the global economy looks in a pretty good place based on all the indicators that we track.
Let's shift gears a bit and talk about oil. So oil prices have risen significantly over recent months, and I'm curious to know why and how big of a risk you think this is to the economy.
Yeah, so we have seen oil prices rise quite a bit. It's a combination of factors that have been driving oil up. So inventories are tightening because OPEC has cut back significantly on supply, and actually U.S. supply has slowed down quite a bit. And then there's this improvement in demand that we're talking about on the global economy, improvement in manufacturing. Most recently, and especially just over the last few days, there's more geopolitical risk premium being injected in the oil price, on concerns about more direct Israel-Iran confrontation, And look, I mean, you know, it's hard to have an edge on exactly how that's going to play out. It's a risk there. If we continue to get a move right now, $90 Brent, we continue to get a move towards, say, $100 because of more geopolitical risks or OPEC, which is generally expected in June to unwind some of its cuts. If they don't do so, then could we be moving towards $100 oil? Yes, that's possible. And what I'd say with that is it's not fatal, for the economy by any means. It's, you know, given how much discussing household incomes are healthy, it's not something that's going to lead to a sudden downturn or anything like that, but it does squeeze the real income story a little bit. If people are paying a little bit more on gas, that means there's less discretionary spending, and that could weigh a little bit on consumption. It's difficult to say how exactly the Fed would react to it, because when you get a supply driven oil price move, they have to weigh, yes, it's somewhat inflationary, but also it's a weight on growth. So it may not necessarily mean that automatically the Fed doesn't deliver cuts just because oil prices are going up. They're focused on the consumer, the health of consumer, and they're focused mostly on core inflation. And so if they see this as largely transitory, it doesn't stop the Fed from going forward with easing this year.
Great. Thanks, Evan. This is great. Thanks, everyone, for listening in. Nicole and Evan, you did a wonderful job of addressing a lot of the questions that are on the minds of our clients and many investors. So thank you both for your time.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.